The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Man, the month of December is flying by. We're mid-December already. I have purchased one item for my wife, which is the only person I have to technically buy for. My wife takes care of everything else, which I'm very grateful for. But I'm going to have to make a roll down to Goldcasters in a little bit and see my buddy Brad and see what they've got on store for me and Misty for Christmas. So please don't take advantage of me, guys. I'm just a poor old guy doing radio and a financial advisor. I need a little help. I need one of those good deals that you always give me, and I appreciate that very, very much. So, of course, another big plug for someone who does religiously advertise here on the station. I'm having a hard time hearing out of my headsets today, so I'm going to try to crank it up. There we go, just a little bit. All right, so we're going to have Hot Rod on in just a little bit. I'm going to do a review of last week's market and what we've been experiencing this week as well. I'm going to give you a little update on inflation, the Fed. We're going to talk about IBM replacing a 401k match with a 5% retirement benefit that's designed to be more of a pension type of an account, like old school pensions might be coming back. And then also my concerns about the debt and the debt load that the United States of America has and where we are headed. I had Jim pull a bunch of stuff off the Congressional Budget Office website, budget.house.gov, and it is alarming what's going on. And we saw a crack in the bond auction last week. Well, what does that mean? It means that I'll get into it later, but people have always asked me, so when does this rooster come to roost? And with all this mounting debt that we have, my answer has always been when people, countries, insurance companies quit buying our debt and you have a sovereign debt crisis on your hands. So I'll get into some of that later on. And also making inflation work for you, not against you, and a few last minute things to do. You still have time this year to get done from a financial standpoint. Did you remember last week I talked about McDonald's new venture, Cosmic's debut up in Chicago, McDonald's new restaurant concept? Well, it's landed and it's up in Chicago. McDonald's new restaurant concept is drawing long lines of curious seekers, kind of like we did at the porthole back in February, March of last year. So keep going out to the porthole as well. But it opened in Chicago suburb last weekend. The space-themed brand is the fast food giant's first new U.S. restaurant concept in more than 60 years, designed to deliver a beverage-heavy menu through takeout-focused locations built in multiple drive-through. The Wall Street Journal checked out Cosmic's on Monday morning, plunging into the parking lot filled with traffic cones, police tape, and officers managing to grow to this growing line of cars. Almost an hour and 40 minutes later, the Journal left with three medium drinks, a breakfast sandwich, hopefully a egg McMuffin, and a few pastries, and a new appreciation for restaurant bathrooms. So I'm sure there'll be a Cosmic coming near you soon. McDonald's says Cosmic's in its test mode for now, and the company plans to build around 10 additional locations in Texas in the first part of 2024, the company said it is evaluating how different drive-through configurations can speed up service. And that's it right here, named after McDonald's alien mascot that appeared in a chain commercial during the late 80s. I remember that. Cosmic's offered a handful of familiar items. Think Egg McMuffins, amen to that. McFlurries, I like that too. But no fries. Its menu, which I love, by the way, but I don't eat them often because I don't want to be fat. its menu otherwise is its own deal. So it's kind of a fun thing to stay on top of. So as I mentioned it last week, I thought I would follow it up with a little update this week as well. All right, let's talk about what happened last week. So late week, last week, two-day rally left stocks higher, adding to November's gains as the last month of trading for 2023 began. Of course, all the major indices were up just a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. The relationship, this has been interesting, between the bond and the stock markets, which has pushed stocks higher in November, falling bond yields, rising stock prices. That's the way it's supposed to work, right? Bond yields go down. They're like, okay, I'll jump to this side. Yields go up. I'll jump to that side. Well, we had yields up and people were still, you know, in the market. So anyway, that kind of disappeared last week. Stocks fell in the first 3 days of the week despite declining yields. So that's the goofiness of all this. Yields dropped following a weak job opening report, the ADP employment update, and a substantial productivity revision. On Thursday, enthusiasm returned with a force on AI-related news. One AI, artificial intelligence chip maker, announced a new AI chip, followed by mega cap tech company unveiling an enhanced version of its AI model for business use. I'm telling you right now, AI is, you have to embrace it. If you don't embrace it, it's going to run you over. So like for us, we're looking for ways to use AI in our planning process. Not to replace us, obviously, but the planning process, how I can actually have it help create radio show outlines, whatever I need it to do. I'm working on that right now to try to embrace more AI modeling within our shop. So stocks continued their climb on Friday despite the rising yields as investors viewed a stronger than expected employment report as increasing the potential for a soft landing. Productivity surges. Higher productivity may be the most effective and preferred way to reduce inflation. Last week, revised third quarter productivity report saw an upward revision of its annualized productivity growth from the initial report of 4.7 to 5.2. That was welcome news on the inflation front and an encouraging development for future corporate profits. The 5.2% jump in productivity represented the fastest pace since the third quarter of 2020. The report also showed unit labor costs falling at 1.2%. Reflecting a cooling wage growth, inflationary pressure, productivity has increased for two straight quarters, and I think it'll continue to do so as technology continues to come faster and faster at us. That is potentially allowing the Fed to ease its restrictive monetary policy. And guess who spoke this week? Well, guess what? It was Chairman Powell, and we'll get Hot Rod on the phone to talk about that because we had Tuesday, we had CPI announced. Wednesday, we had the Producer Price Index. Thursday, today, retail sales and jobless claims, and then we're going to wrap up the week with some more stuff coming out of the producer manufacturing index as well. So let's get Hot Rod on the phone and talk about things and where we stand on things today. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance. I saw him this morning. Didn't get to say hi at Uptown Cafe. Call him at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And what a great time of year to go to the auction house. KennyBlaneAuctions.com. Visit them there. They are your full-service auction service. They'll offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. It's a great time of year to talk to family about what's next. Again, visit them online at KennyBlaneAuctions.com. Rod Holloway now joins me, of course, Voice of Glass in the afternoon on Mondays and Big Show Friday, which will be tomorrow, where they'll probably talk Dolphins football as much as they talk Fed and the markets, which I always enjoy that segment of the show on Big Show Friday. But, Rod, here we go. We had a big week this week. A lot of news came out. Inflation, it moderated, but stays too high for the Fed, according to the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday. So the victory dance on inflation is going to have to wait. Inflation has stabilized late this year, as well below last year's high, but still above the levels that the Fed likes to see. And we've seen a lot of this stuff. Prices did come down on flights, cars, pretty much all discretionary stuff, but not food. Food's still up there as well. We had the 10-year Treasury go from nearly 5 down to 4.10 this week. Mortgage rates are still stubbornly high, Historically, they're about 2 points over the 10-year, which would means they should be around 6.1, but they're not. They're still up there around 7-ish, I believe. So, Rod, the Fed came out and spoke yesterday. So, just a ton going on. So, just want to get your take on all of that and more.
Sure. Well, to one big surprise, you had mentioned the 10-year dropping all the way to 4.10. The 10-year actually has dropped below 4.
Wow.
This morning.
Wow.
You're trading at 3.89 on the 10-year right now. So, an unbelievable move in a matter of about 2.5 to 3 months, in which the 10-year kicked its head above 5% and then has retreated to all the way below 4% right now.
Well, tell people what that means, because that's an indicator, right, of what future growth and inflation is supposed to be. That's what the bond market's predicting.
Yeah. So obviously the bond market is telling us that the economy is continuing to slow and that they foresee more slowing into the future. Now, slowing is okay. It's a matter of how much it slows. You know, which is, I think, where we're at this fine line. Now, the Fed, for the first time, did acknowledge yesterday that they may be at a restrictive level that is appropriate for where we're at, meaning they may not have to increase rates anymore. Now, that also doesn't mean that they signaled that they were ready to cut rates, because they also acknowledge that inflation hasn't hit the target that they're at. So it is most certainly making progress. It's moving in the direction it needs to. And probably more important to the Fed, it's actually declining a little bit faster than what their projections were. So things are working in their favor for them to potentially implement a soft landing. Now, we won't know about the soft landing really until the Fed is done. If the Fed gets spooked about inflation at some point in the future here and feels that inflation is about to tick up again, then they may re-engage increasing interest rates. And then it's a whole different scenario as we look forward as far as, is it a soft landing? Are we going to potentially bring the economy to a slower growth than what we really want or need in that regard? And only time will tell us the data points kick in. I think the biggest thing that probably concerns me where we're at here, and as we start to turn our attention to 2024 and the first half of 2024, the market is pricing in 70% probability of a rate cut in March, 90% for April, 90% for May.
I don't see
the market is assuming 4 to 5 rate cuts next year from the Fed. I don't see it either. The way I see it, if the Fed is ready to cut rates as early as March, given that they just ended the increasing cycle here this fall and have continued to signal that while they're making progress and everything's headed in the direction that they want it to, that they still have a long ways to go to achieve their objective and to, as you say, you know, throw up the victory sign of, okay, we've conquered this in inflation thing, that the market is potentially setting itself up for failure. I mean, what makes sense to me is that the Fed in the latter half of the year, if everything continues to move in the direction that it has been consistently, that the Fed should be ready in the second half of the year to say, we no longer need to be in restrictive territory, which is where they believe they are, and they can begin to take a few of those rate cuts away to get back to neutral. My fear is if they're truly cutting in March, it's not for them to get back to neutral. It's because they see something in the data that is beginning to slow much faster than what they're comfortable with, and they have to aggressively go from restricting the economy to stimulating the economy. And that's just not an environment we want to be in which the Fed is constantly engaged in loose standards or restrictive standards. It'd be really nice to get to a point in time that the economy stands on its own and the Fed can sit back and say, hey, we don't really need to do anything right now because the economy is growing, employment is solid, prices are relatively stable. We can sit at neutral for a while here and don't need to do anything. But my fear is that we've become so engaged with the Fed since 2008. I don't know if the Fed will ever feel comfortable sitting on neutral and sitting on their hands and not needing to do anything.
We look back at 2022, you know, the peak of the market was in around December of 2021, I think. And then we've had kind of this nutso year where it didn't make any sense. We had a pullback, then it rallied again. I was trying to look real quick on 2 years. We're not quite there yet, back to where we were literally 2 years ago.
We at this point, what we have done for the NASDAQ and the S&P, we've set a new high for the year, but we have not set a new all-time high. Now, the Dow Jones did set a new all-time high, but it also didn't have as far to run because it didn't get as big of a run up, and then its sell off in 22, it didn't go down anywhere near as much as the S&P and the NASDAQ. So the Dow, all-time high, S&P and the NASDAQ have set new highs for the year, but yes, have not got back to their highs that were set. For the S&P 500, we're talking back in January of 22 to the very end, December 31st of 21, is roughly the intraday peak that we have seen in the market for the S&P.
So when we look back at 2022, you and I have talked about this, that we thought the market probably should have reacted more negatively this year than what it has. Number one, it made no sense with interest rates so high that you would pay up for earnings the way that people are willing to pay up for earnings. We think maybe 2022 was the correction in anticipation of 2023 slowdown in the economy. The market's a difficult animal to figure out. I mean, it always anticipates what's next. So when you see, okay, wow, we think the market, you know, we think the Fed's done, we think they're going to cut, then you're going to see a rally. But volatility is scary low right now. You know, volatility only spikes, folks, when the market's going crazy. I mean, usually crazy down. Right now, volatility is crazy, crazy low, which means, I think you've said it before, setting ourselves up for an overconfidence of that things are good and that we're going to continue to see this thing go up. And I just think people need to be really careful. And in fact, I would say use this as an opportunity and as a Christmas gift to yourself to do some serious rethinking about your allocations. Because, you know, when interest rates go down, bond values go up. Well, rates are still pretty dang high, even though the 10-year dropped below 4. It's probably not a bad time, Hot Rod, to be pressing the old rebalance button here as we enter the last part of the year. Because we've seen it go bad before at the very last of December. Traditionally, December is a decent month. But I think it was, I don't remember, 2015 maybe or 18, where the market pretty much tanked on Christmas Eve, I believe it was, and we ended up having a really rotten end of the year. It can happen. It can happen.
Yeah, most certainly can. Yeah, we didn't get a Santa Claus rally in that year. Yeah, with where momentum is at and how the market is reacting to all the data points that come out, it makes sense that we probably rally in the year end. But that potentially sets us up for a slight correction in January, February, because I do believe that we're just slightly getting ahead of ourselves. You know, to your point, Dave, on the volatility, these are things that historically new bull markets do not begin when volatility is setting down here around 12. And as of this morning, you've actually ticked under 12.
Wow,
so that is historically very low. You also typically don't start brand new bull markets with price to earnings ratio setting where they're at. So backwards looking, the last 12 months, that price to earnings multiple is at 22.64. Forward looking, the next 12 months earnings price to earnings ratio setting at 21.84. Those are relatively
high.
So,
yeah, high.
So it's not that you can't go up at those levels. It's just hard to fathom that it is a sustainable bull market that is going to last for years when you start at those levels. Because one, let's be honest, typically new bull markets start after big sell-offs. Big sell-offs typically spike volatility. When the volatility spikes, you have the big sell-offs, things go down, revenue and stuff decrease a little bit, so then your earnings multiple comes down, and you kind of start a little bit fresh and begin rebuilding that growth and participating in the growth, not only from earnings growth and revenue growth, but also price appreciation with the underlying stocks that you own. So it just becomes difficult to have a sustainable rally unless you have extremely fast earnings growth that you can grow into an earnings multiple like this, because it's just hard to fathom that you would truly have a large earnings expansion, because normally you get earnings expansions in low interest rate environments, not slightly higher interest rate environments. And I know there are some analysts that are calling for a positive 24 because they do believe that people are willing to have earnings multiple expansion in 24. I just struggle with wondering why people would do that, because if we sold off in 22 because you're not willing to pay a higher earnings multiple because of higher interest rates, and in the beginning of 22 we were still in the increasing interest rate environment, now we're done increasing interest rates but they're still high, we've not started decreasing them, so why would we suddenly be willing to have multiple expansion with higher interest rates if we once sold because we were going to get higher interest rates, and you don't want enough multiples expand. So it gets a little bit wacky of where we're at. Like I said, I do think the economy is settling in. I do think that the earnings recession we had in the first and second quarter, this last quarter, third quarter, flipped to being positive. That's good. So I think earnings growth is returning. But will it be robust enough for us to start a sustainable bull market at the levels we're at? Once again, that doesn't mean we're predicting a massive sell-off. Part of that correction could be going down a little bit. Part of it could be going sideways until earnings growth picks up even more than what we know that it's at right now. And that's if earnings growth continues to pick up as the estimates are suggesting.
Well, you and I have been doing this long enough to know that you have these things called disruptors, right? And AI has been the big talk. And when you have a big mega cap company unveiling an enhanced version of its AI model for business use, that makes, and then you have a higher productivity number come in, you know, you might be able to do more with less. And obviously the biggest right. expense everyone has is wages. So that could be the catalyst for supporting what we're seeing as far as forward-looking earnings. They're banking on productivity surges.
Most certainly. That productivity increases can't be a big thing, and you are dead on with that, which is why some of the people from the tech sector are saying the next tech revolution has begun. It's the cloud computing. It's the AI. You know, that rollout to the businesses, part of what they've talked about is businesses potentially using AI to help enhance and improve their logistics. Well, we know coming out of the pandemic, logistics became a huge problem. You know, we'd go into the grocery stores or into Walmart, and you'd have whole aisles empty of products. Well, maybe AI can get in and solve that and do a better job of setting up shipments and when they need to be shipped and when they should be arrived and how much should be shipped and maybe a different product mix needs to be included in that. They may be able to enhance things. And yes, that is most certainly one way when you're sitting in a high earnings multiple environment to offset that is not only the earnings growth that is returning, but on top of that, productivity enhancements, because productivity enhancements typically lead to improved profit margins. Profit margins lead to faster earnings growth. So all of those things can most certainly work itself out. So that's why we're paying attention to it, but we're not sending the alarm bell that, ooh, we've got to do something different because of it, because it could work itself out, but we're just being somewhat cautious and not saying, oh my gosh, the Fed won, this is a soft landing, jump in head first into stocks, and there's no longer any risk. Unfortunately, that's not where we're at, but that doesn't mean that we can't have a great 2024.
Well, you think about everything. I haven't had a live person check me out at the grocery store convenience store, but like CVS or anywhere. Even went to Lucas Oil Stadium. You know, you go in to a little place, you stick your credit card, you tap it, you walk in, you grab your drink, you walk out the other aisle, and somehow magically it charges your credit card. So there's a lot of advances happening, and that's the only way that this will be supported. Rob, we're going to let you go. We've got a lot to cover today, so we'll listen to you on Glass in the Afternoon tomorrow on Big Show Friday.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
Thanks, man. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you about this movement that IBM is actually leading in replacing the 401k match with a 5% retirement benefit contribution. The tech giant employees can still contribute to their 401ks, but key incentives to do so are going away in 2024. They're kind of pushing people to do what they need to do, which is put themselves in a reliable income stream situation when they get to retirement. I'm going to talk about that in great detail when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. The year 2015. The location, the Business Expert Forum at the Harvard Faculty Club. As a featured speaker, I was there, and I spoke on the retirement crisis in America. If you want to listen to it, go to our website, cfci.us. It's exactly 5 minutes long, kind of like a TED Talk, so to speak. You can go to, I think, Speaking Engagements or something on our website. You'll find it, and you'll see it right there. David Hayes, featured speaker for Business Expert Forum at Harvard Faculty Club, one of the highlights of the last 10 years for me, to be honest. It was so much fun and scary at the same time. But I'm like, dude, we've got a problem on our hands, right? Number one, people aren't signing up for their 401ks, or if they are signing up, they're signing up just to get the match. That's all that's happening. We have to have auto enrollments. We have to have auto escalates. We have to have automatic investments for them based on their age. Make them opt out, not opt in. Well, guess what? That movement has started. It was kind of on the radar a little bit, but it wasn't really going. So in 15, I'm like, I'm pounding the pavement on this dude, right? I'm sending out the video to large employers, everywhere, and saying, listen, we've got to do this. Monroe County Schools, thankfully, we're knee-deep with them, and guess what? They have auto enroll, right? We have auto investments. We want to get auto escalate. I want to have auto enrollment into the Roth, because if you're a new school teacher making 30 grand a year, you shouldn't be putting money in tax-deferred accounts. Pay it now, right? It's this low tax rate you're in. We need to be smart about this. Well, IBM is taking the lead here. We're like, you know, back in the old days, and I say old days because I've been around a long time, you know, people didn't have to worry about it. You put their time in, right? Age, years of service, they were with Social Security, they were set. They didn't really rely on their personal savings. They didn't need to worry about a 401k. They had pensions, right? So pensions and Social Security typically covered all the income they need, and any other savings that they have is just gravy on top. Well, now we're in this yo-yo world, right? You're on your own, which means, listen, I've got Social Security, and they're going to fix that. Don't worry about it. But I need to have all of the rest of my money provide the income I need for me and my family. Well, that's where people get screwed up, because I have this big pile of money, and now I have to figure out how to take it out. Well, if you don't have a real good strategic plan, and even in our bucket strategies, folks, I mean, they mitigate the risk of sequence of return risk, which is taking money out in a bad market and then compounding yourself to zero quickly. It definitely mitigates that, having, you know, 7 to 12 years of reliable income teed up so that my later money can cook there in the stock market for 10 plus years. And it usually works out. Does it always? No. Look at 2000, 2010. I mean, that was the lost decade. Now, there were peaks and valleys during that time that you could have swept and kept, but for the most part, that's not it. Some people are like, I want guaranteed income. I want it insured, and that's a pension. Social Security, that's the greatest pension of all, right? It's guaranteed. It increases with inflation. Well, what can you can do it. You can buy an annuity if you want to. Go out and take the risk off the table, right? There's only a few things you can do with risk. You can just say, screw it, I'll take it. Yeah, I'll accept the risk. I'll wing it, right? You can manage it, like doing the bucket strategy. You can transfer it, which says I want someone else to take the risk. That's insurance, right? Or you just avoid it. You just say, I'm not going there. Well, you can't really not go there. You've got to go there. You can't stick your money under a pillow, because if you do, every year it buys less. That's inflation risk. That's purchasing power risk. So IBM has stepped up and said, listen, we, starting next year, are not going to make a match to your 401k. You can still put money in your 401k, and we encourage you to do that, but we're going to put this into a retirement benefits plan. It's called a retirement benefit account, and with the existing IBM personal pension plan, which saves for retirement automatically, no contributions required from the employee. This all came out of a report I just read with the 401k specialist. The RBA adds stability and predictability for a predictable benefit that diversifies a retirement portfolio and provides greater flexibility and guaranteed income in retirement. I think it's fantastic. The IBM is also switching its existing 5% 401k match and 1% automatic contribution for eligible U.S. employees to a new monthly automatic tax deferred, which I hate that part, amount to an RBA, which equals 5% of their eligible pay. So it's great, because their pension has been frozen since 2008 and closed to any new participants since 2005. So IBM, they said, is continually making improvements of how we support employee financial well-being. Trust me, folks, employees that are less stressed about money are more productive employees. They're better. So whether it's in their current day and stage of life, or the worry about, oh my gosh, I haven't saved nothing for retirement, I need to get busy now, that's stressful, right? It might keep them working overtime that you want them to work, but it's stressful. So going back to my theme for years and years and years, who's the happiest in retirement? Those that have faith, those that have great families, those that have great friend networks, and those that have a fixed income stream. Faith, family, friend, and a fixed income stream, the absolute secret to a happy retirement. Let's take a break. When we come back, the bond market is on edge. Hey, if you want to listen to that, please go to cfci.us and you'll enjoy it. It's the featured speaker for the Business Expert Forum at the Harvard Faculty Club. Sometime I'll tell you the story behind that. And if I tell it to you and then you watch it, you will laugh. But I'm going to talk about the bond market putting the market on edge a little bit, but we continue to shrug it off. But I think it's something we need to keep our eye on. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. What a great day. Hope you're ready for Christmas like I am not. I wish you. My wife is getting... Evidently, the boxes that show up at our door daily, they're for somebody. I don't know who they are for. I don't open them. They say Misty Hayes. I just leave them alone because I don't know. And then we, this time of year, get inundated with gifts from, you know, vendors and people like that, which I'm grateful for. But it's like pies and cakes and danishes. And it's like, come on, dude. Give me a break here just for a second. Give me a nice pen. I'll take a pen or something that's not as fattening as that. Those peanut butter balls that were fantastic, by the way, Rita. Thank you so much for those. All right. So remember, we talk about debt, $30 trillion, $32 trillion, on our way to $50 trillion, right? And that's something that is just the beginning or the tip of the iceberg. At what point does it stop? People are always like, when does this rooster come to roost? Well, with all this mounting debt, my answer has always been when people quit buying it. Well, this week's auction and the last few auctions are starting to show some cracks. Now, let me talk to you about that. Maybe a month ago, we issued about $1 trillion of debt in about, I don't know, 30 days. And the Treasury had to buy back like 20% of it in one case. Well, this week's auction, this is from Monday's Wall Street Journal, so it would have been the previous week. It says, this week's Treasury bid comes amid concerns on record-breaking debt levels. And that's where we are today, not where we're going. So it says the Treasury prefers its debt sales to be kind of like, just afterthoughts. But lately, they are sparking fireworks in the market. Scrutiny of Treasury auctions, whereby the government funds operations by selling the world's safest bonds to big banks and dealers, have grown alongside their size. For years, many in Washington and Wall Street assumed that investors would buy any number of bonds the government issued, no matter the fiscal outlook. Testing that assumption, the sale of $20.8 trillion new treasuries in the first 11 months. See, this is debt. We're having to refinance it. You forget about it. We got two issues here. We have one, we're borrowing $1 trillion to balance our budget, which is that even really like a real thing, balancing the budget. We're borrowing $1 trillion, but then we're going to have to refinance all the bonds that are maturing. And we were paying, 1 or 2%. Now we're paying 5. So that's a real issue. And if you compound all that, I mean, it becomes a real issue. So the first 11 months of the year, it's set to surpass the 2020 record of just under $21 trillion of new debt. Whether the market can absorb the rolling waves of debt without disruption is the biggest question on Wall Street ahead of this week's planned Treasury auction. So it's this week, I'm sorry. A combined $108 billion of 3-year, 10-year, and 30-year bonds hit the block on Monday. They hit the block on Monday and Tuesday, along with $213 billion of shorter-term bills. The last 30-year auction was so poorly received, and I've reported that to you guys, that it rattled other parts of the market. So no one's wanting to take the 30-year, but they'll take the 1-year, they'll take the 2-year, right? They'll take a 3-year. Investors fear that signs of weak demand might spread, raising the cost of government borrowing and hurting the economy. The Treasury Department auctions off bonds in chunks by maturity at monthly intervals. Everyone from individuals to foreign banks can buy them in exchange for reliable coupon payments and the government's guarantee that they will back their money and you will get it back when the bond matures. So, am I telling you guys that we're in trouble right now? No. But when you start to see the demand for longer-term debt, they're like, 30 years? Are you kidding me? Because we're looking at a situation right now. This came out of the Congressional Budget Office. I had Jimmy print this for me. Debt and deficits are projected to grow to $1 million per American household. That means that's what your share of it is, per American household. That's not even per taxpayer. Only half the people in America pay tax. The CBO projects that debt will reach $144 trillion in the next 20 years. That's equivalent to 1 million per American household. That's crazy. Let me make you feel better. That's only like 500,000 in today's dollars because we have to adjust for inflation. That's more than four times the median net worth in America, which, by the way, median household net worth in America is only $122,000. So they're giving you this outlook. And then they say, where do taxes need to be to simply pay for the things we've already promised, like what we've already said we're going to do? Well, right here in the report, it came out in November. It's like double. I've been telling you this for, the last 10 years probably, that taxes have to double according to the Congressional Budget Office, which, by the way, is a nonpartisan analyst for the U.S. Congress. It's the Congressional Budget Office. I don't even know why they exist because no one listens to them anyway. Probably another thing, we just ditch it and say, well, we don't really pay attention to what you have to say anyway. So, you know, why even exist? The fact is that the heading of this piece directly from them says, budget, House Budget Committee sounding the alarm. The CBO outlook shows share of debt is projected to grow to 1 million per household. Folks, I don't know, but I'm just saying we've got to keep our head on a swivel. Now, here's the other thing you're going to say to me. What do we do about it, Hayes? I don't know. I wish I knew. I don't know. With the U.S. dollar pegged to everything in the world, I don't know. Some would say gold. Some would say crypto. I'm going to stick with In God We Trust. It's right in the front of our money. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, which is us, the people of the United States. It's our tax bill. We have to pay it. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. Tax rates must double because that absorbs nearly 90% of every dollar that comes in the coffers. Next year, we're going to have to put our catch-up contributions into a Roth. You can ask your employer contributions to go into the Roth if the plan allows. Pay the tax, right, when it's the cheapest. We have literally 2 years left, 2024 and 2025, before tax rates go up for good. And again, David McKnight has said it here on the show, the author of Power of Zero. I've said it before, 37 to 39.6, that doesn't keep us up at night. It's what the Congressional Budget Office says, that the top tax rate needs to go to 77% or even 80% in some cases to make this all right. And the bottom tax rate, it's not going to be 10. Not going to be 12. They say 22. That should be the lowest rate, and we should have the highest rate near 70%. And if you don't know that that's possible, go back and look at history. History back in the 60s and 70s, it was exactly that. The top rate was, 68, 69%. Bottom rate was 20%. It's there. It's history. So when do you pay the tax on your money? It's when it's the cheapest, not the furthest time in the future. So pay it now. Be done with it. I know it can be painful. Do little bits at a time if you want to, but at some point you have to pull the Band-Aid off and absolutely pay the tax and be done. Because guess what? This $30 trillion going to $50, going to $144 trillion. And by the way, if you go back and look at the estimates of the Congressional Budget Office of 20 years ago where they thought we'd be today, they're off by somewhere around $10 trillion. So my guess is they're way low. So it's probably much worse than what they're reporting because they always get it wrong. And it's always wrong on the low side. So take care of yourself, your family, your business. Do what you need to do now to protect yourselves, and that's pay the tax on those tax-deferred accounts. That's all I can tell you because I don't know. I don't know when all this kind of happens. I don't know. But I just know that there's a few things you can do and things you can control. My dad always says to me, listen, 90% of the things you worry about probably never happen. 5% of the things you have no control over. 5% of the things that you do have some control over. So focus on that 5%. And you'll have a much happier life. All right, let's take a break. Come back. This is Making Inflation Work For You, Not Against You. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, I'm going to have to be fast because I've got two segments to go and I've been ranting and raving. Okay, so making inflation work for you, not against you. Think about renting, right? You used to pay $500, now you pay $1,000. But what if you had a mortgage and you were paying $1,000 10 years ago? Now it feels like $700. So that's a good way of thinking about how making inflation work for you, against you, not against you. The other thing is tax rates continue to widen out with inflation. That's a good way to make inflation work for you, not against you. This year, married, filing, joint, you could go up to $364,000 plus of taxable income and still be in the 24% bracket. That's after your deductions. Next year, it's $383,900 at 24%. That's cheap. That's taxable, not gross. That's one way you can make inflation work for you, not against you. And there's a lot of ways to think about this, but I'm telling you right now, that's a lot of money I can move at a pretty cheap rate and be done with it. And then when that stops, if money can double every 10 years at 7.2, it just doubles. And if you do the math on that, folks, you say, I have all this money tax-free and it only cost me that. That was a good deal. But sometimes you have to look back to smell the roses on that deal, because it does stink when you write that big hefty check. Or you can have it withheld. Preferably not. You can pay from outside funds, but you can have it withheld from the conversion as well. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and wrap it up with a couple quick things. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, real quick here. Let's see, just things you need to make sure you do before the end of the year. Make those 529 college plan contributions. You can now put up to $7,500 in and still get that 20% tax credit that changed this year. Starting next year, we can start rolling those 529 balances into a Roth. That's a good thing. Roth conversions, you still have about a week or two to get them done. I think you can still probably get them done. Most custodians are saying we're going to have a cutoff date. IRA contributions, you don't have to make those until later next year, but why not make them now? Contributions for 2023, 2024, make spousal IRA contributions to get a backdoor Roth in if you haven't already done one. Probably too late to check on those mutual fund distributions because most of them have already been sent out, but you still have time to do some lost harvesting if you want to. Do some cost basis resetting. Make sure you've maxed out your retirement plan contributions. Check on that. You have an HSA. Make sure you max that guy out. That's the triple threat of retirement income. Make sure your required minimum distributions are done and your QCDs, qualified charitable distributions, are done. You have 2 weeks left. I wouldn't wait until the last minute to make that stuff happen. I had a call from a friend's dad this week who was wanting to do a Roth conversion here at the end of the year. And you have to keep in mind those IRMA numbers, which are the income that you have to keep in mind for Medicare premiums. So he wanted to stay under his threshold, and we did that. So you just have to keep your head on a swivel. There's so much stuff to consider. You know, limits for Medicare. You've got, you know, capital gains. Every dollar is taxed differently. All money is taxed differently. That's something you should always keep in mind when you're looking at all the different sources of income. So anyway, just a lot of quick hit things you could do before the end of the year. We don't have much time left, a couple of weeks left. So I'll be back in here live next week. And then I think my dad's going to be on with me the very last show of the year, which is traditional for us. So looking forward to that, as he did finally go to part-time, somewhat part-time. We'll get the full scoop on that when he's on live with me. We're trying to work out a fishing trip with Roland Martin, of all things, out in Lake Okeechobee. So I think he and I are going to try to team up with Roland Martin, he's a famous fisherman, the end of February 1st of March. So maybe Dad and I'll talk about that as well. Anyway, have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.